Myles Garrett was asked once again earlier today about the idea of being traded. Here's what Myles had to say.
You had mentioned that when you guys are losing like this and you're 1-6 and the trade deadline is coming up, nobody is really necessarily safe. I'm just wondering, have the Browns given you any reassurances at all that you are safe and that you're not going anywhere?
I'll be playing here.
So either that's a yes, or he has some sort of contractual control that guarantees he ain't going anywhere.
Yeah, it seems pretty much locked in, which I don't know that is all that surprising. I mean, I guess a lot has changed in terms of the fan base's relationship with the players after Sunday. But, I mean, Myles sat there last Friday and basically said he had no intentions of leaving. He wants to win in Cleveland. He wants to be in Cleveland. So I think that story pretty much is I mean, I guess you can't put it completely to bed because things could always change. But it does sound like nobody on either side wants to see Myles Garrett play anywhere else, and I think that's probably the right move.
I think anyone talking about how the Browns should consider trading Myles Garrett is just talking themselves into it. There's no logical.
I think it just
comes
from a place of frustration.
Yeah,
fans are mad, and they're like, "Well, let's just." I said this the other night, Nick. I get so sick of when things aren't going right. Like the go-to answer, and I don't want to just say this as Browns fans, but it definitely happens a lot in this town, or not even Cleveland fans, but it definitely happens a lot in this town. It just feels like the easy thing that everybody goes to is, well, just blow it up. And I don't know if it's because we've gotten used to our teams going through so many rebuilds that it's like, well, it's not that big of a deal. We're so used to it at this point, like we're almost numb to it. So it's like, why not just do that thing? But like, dude, this league shows you all the time that you don't have to strip it down to nothing and build it back. Like the 1-31 was an anomaly. Like the teams that do, and look where it got you. Like it hasn't gotten you. It's gotten you a little bit closer to the Super Bowl, but it's not like you emerged on the other side of that, and now all of a sudden you're a consistent Super Bowl contender. So it's not even a guarantee that like that works. You have a generational player in your building right now. You don't just trade him because you're having a bad season. If you can find a way to turn this thing around quickly, maybe it starts with drafting a quarterback next year because that's all you can afford at the quarterback position with the Deshaun contract. And you draft the right guy, and you reshape the offensive line, and you still have some of these key pieces here. Who's to say that they can't be like a playoff contending team again next year? Like, I just hate that we get so stuck in this mindset of, well, let's just blow it up because things aren't going right. Like, it's not that easy. It's not that simple. And you don't have to do that every time things go awry.
Well, I think it's punitive. I think it is. I think it's like the idea of you want something to show you. It's that pound of flesh thing. And I agree, like, I don't think people realize there's already going to be a lot of change. Even if all you do is just replace a quarterback, that in and of itself is a massive amount of change, whether it's a veteran with a draft pick, whether it's just a draft pick, and you know, like,
and Deshaun,
however you kind of draw this up, that in and of itself is a lot of change. And that's before we get to the idea of, I mean, because listen, even if Kevin survives, this coaching staff's going through another big change. And that's just the reality of where things are. So, like, I think where we are right now, because, again, I think, like, people keep talking about two first-round picks like it's some wonderific little, oh, you got two first-round picks for Myles. I'll be honest with you. It's not enough. And frankly, there's probably no amount of draft collateral that will make me go, oh, like the Herschel Walker trade. Yeah, okay, I get it. But in the end, with every you get 10 picks for Myles, you're just going to be trying to find one more Myles.
Right.
And well, you don't traditionally get those guys with a 20th pick, the 24th pick, where teams trying to trade for Myles are going to be picking.
Well, and that's the other part of this is, like, if you're trying to replace Myles, people act like it's so easy to do that. Like, oh, well, there'll be another good pass rusher in the next class. Like, yeah. Guys, there's a difference between good pass rushers and, like, generational pass rushers. Like, I'm not saying you can't find a Max Crosby or an Aiden Hutchinson year to year where there's some good players, but, like, Myles is consensusly one of, if not the best defensive player in the league, and you're just willing to part ways with that because the season's gone to you know what? Like, I don't get it. And I think back to, I don't know if you remember this, but when John Gruden was coaching the Raiders, they traded Khalil Mack like that second year, year he was there. And he had a press conference after a game or something. I don't know. Maybe it was during the training camp where he flat out gave an answer to a question that was like, yeah, you know, good pass rushers are just really hard to find in this league. And it was like, but you had one here. And I guess it's worked out for the Raiders to an extent because they did end up finding Max Crosby several years later, and he's been great. He's one of the top pass rushers in this league. But at the same time, like, it's not just so like cut and dry. It's like, well, you move on from one pass rusher and you find the next one. So, no, like, I want Miles to be here as part of the solution to this team's problems right now next year. He's still young enough where he can still put up big numbers. He's coming off a year where he won Defensive Player of the Year. Like, I don't know why that has to be the conclusion that we all jump to so flippantly. It's just, we'll blow it all up and trade everybody. Like, it's not as – even though things seem dire, next year we could be talking about a completely different team in a completely different position 8 weeks into the season, and I want Miles here for that.
By the way, a little Browns news to pass along here. A little update from the Browns saying quarterback Deshaun Watson underwent successful surgery today to repair his ruptured right Achilles tendon. The surgery was performed by Dr. Bob Anderson, a foot and ankle specialist in Charlotte, and a full recovery is expected. So that's the latest on Deshaun. But here is where I think we've gotten in the season. I don't see the point in playing Miles for the next 10 games. And maybe you play him through the next two home games because – you know, then you'll get through about half the season, and then you have the bye, and then you kind of go from there. But given that Miles is dealing with feet injury, and that he even said, like, I got to deal with it, they're not going away, might have to have surgery, I just think it's as simple as this is a lost season, and the worst thing you could do is take Miles and risk a further injury because, much like we talked about earlier in the season, like he was saying, like the feet injury at the time were impacting his thigh. It was impacting his Achilles, right, or calf, quote unquote, which we all know is synonymous with Achilles.
Yeah.
I don't know we're there today. And again, we got two more home games. I think it's I can understand, but I'll say this: if it was very, 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 very clear that there was cut and dry, the season is over. They're not going to tell you they're not trying to win. They're going to keep trying because it's different for coaches. But I'm saying the organization understands what the season is. So you can't compound the holy crap for this season. You cannot compound the issues with this by letting Miles go out there for the next 10 Sundays in the name of we got to win a couple games that matter not.
Yeah, I think that for me that comes down to like what his doctors and the people that work on him are telling him. Like if there is concern that this injury, like was kind of flaring up earlier this season, is going to impact his Achilles, and then that's a worry that you have is that he could rupture his Achilles, then, yeah, I think you at some point are going to have to shut him down here. If they're not worried about that and it's just like, hey, you're going to have surgery, it's a four-month recovery, you'll be back in plenty of time for the season, then yeah, I can understand where he would then play out the rest of the year. But that is a situation they have to monitor. I wouldn't necessarily say they're there yet. Maybe you wait till you're mathematically officially eliminated from the playoffs, which honestly, that could happen in the next like three games anyway, depending on how things
but
go.
If he's in pain, why is he playing? Even if it's not Achilles, even if it can just lead to a bigger
foot
injury.
Well, but you can be in pain and be playing and it not necessarily make things like there's been players who play through injuries that aren't going to cause further damage.
Well, yeah, but why? Like, what is the point in having him out there? If he's not comfortable, it's impacting his performance, which I think we all can agree to some degree it is. Miles does have some sort of gravity. Him just being out there is.
Yeah.
Like, and here's the reason why it matters. Because the Browns, this is a huge test for Kevin. Kevin has let the player make the decision as many times as we've seen it. It happened with Deshaun's shoulder. It happened with Baker's shoulder.
Yeah, I was gonna say Baker.
And the reality is each one of those situations blew up in your face one way or another. And it never has worked out. And if Kevin wants to prove to me, because the next 10 games, it's not about can he go 5-5 for me. It's not about, well, can we make the offense look like some semblance of a professional offense. Like, that's the bare minimum. His thing is don't lose this locker room and don't do anything in pursuit of winning that hurts your long-term ability to win. Namely, keep putting Miles out there. I'll be honest with you. I think we've already gotten proof of concept that Miles playing on these leads to other injuries. It doesn't have to be a season ender. Like if he's saying, yeah, the foot led to the thigh and the calf, he's telling you this has already happened. You can't just leave it up to Mike.
I will say he hasn't brought up the foot injury or the feet injuries in several weeks. So I don't know if that just means like they're not bothering quite as much. I haven't noticed him. I know he still isn't playing like 100% of the snaps, but I haven't noticed quite as much that he, you know, isn't on the field for certain plays. Maybe they've toned down a little bit. I don't know.
Or maybe he was asked to stop talking about them.
Yeah, that could be it too. But if Kevin Stefanski is going to rely solely on asking Myles Garrett, do you want to play? I think we all know Myles is going to say he's going to want to play through these injuries. At some level, like the organization is going to have to take that power into their own hands and be the ones who say, yeah, we're going to sit you down and just tell you to go get this surgery.
How's it not now?
I mean, you didn't even say it was now, technically. You said it doesn't have to be. You said you understand like the next two weeks.
But I'm throwing this out here as the foreshadowing of if before Myles gets shut down, because there's no way. Guys, there's no way he's playing 17 games this year. He shouldn't. There's a lost season. Even if they try and get to 500, there's a lost season. 500, you're not going to get any close to where you need to be. But but I understand the emphasis on trying to win every game and what that does in the locker room. But like,
well, I think that's the key thing.
But if Myles goes out there this week and gets hurt, seriously hurt, how can you not hold this organization accountable? How can you not hold Kevin accountable?
I mean, that's fair. I do think though, like until you're at a point where you can knowingly say to your like until you're at a point where you know the locker room understands where they're at and you don't you, let me put it this way, until this team is at a place where they feel good about the message they've sent is sufficient enough to make it seem like they're still trying to win, because that's the thing, Kevin Stefanski cannot lose this locker room or he's toast. Like, he's gonna lose his job. He has to still be willing to put him out there and compete and show that they're trying to win long enough so that he doesn't lose that entire group of guys. And once we get to a point where you know the season's
So Kevin should keep going and playing Myles because it's best for Kevin? Because I'll be honest, that makes it more.
But I think it's best for the organization and the team, though. Like, maybe not. Okay, I see what you're saying. Like, maybe not for the organization long term if he gets hurt. But I'm just saying, like, he has to manage the idea that he needs this locker room to still believe in him. He needs this group to kind of stick together. And you need Myles' presence out there to do that.
As a fan, I want to see Myles out there on the field. As a pragmatist, this is a huge risk that they take every single day. Live from the Clevelander here in downtown Cleveland, ahead of the Cavaliers home opener, game two of the season, but game one of the home slate coming up tonight in downtown Cleveland. Stop by and see us. We love seeing all your smiley, happy faces. We've already seen a few of you guys. I'd love to see more of you as well. As we get going, I will tell you. So occasionally people come up, Spencer, and they'll take pictures of us or, you know, even like we're here courtesy of our friends at McUltra. They'll take pictures of us, you know, to put on the website or whatever or for proof that we actually showed up and did this. And somebody was actually coming up to take a picture. And Mac, I saw out of the periphery of my eye, Mac leaned back and did like a pose, like a stance
his
of like
Mac pose.
I'm
his stoic,
Mac Robinson.
His stoic Mac.
I'm Mac Robinson, and I am.
I'm
good
the
looking.
Engineer of this program,
and I will engineer this program as soon as you snap that picture. And I really wish everyone could have seen. It was almost like a power pose, you know, like power suit, power tie. Like I imagine, like in his mind, he's like, I have a tie on now. I have it. Like, see, right? So we're getting a picture. I just did the Mac pose for the picture of that. Yep. Did you see it?
I didn't see him do it, but then I heard you in real talk. Because here's the problem. I'm on the other end, of the other side of the table.
Yeah.
So my back is to where all the photographers are. So they're all taking – they're just taking pictures basically of the back of my head when they're taking all these pictures. So people are going to – now we're getting one taken where I can actually look. There we go.
Yeah.
No,
I also like that you said all the photographers are as if there is just
yeah we've got an entire scrum of photographers
got the paparazzi here like guys please we're in studio
they
we're
heard
in
the call on the
here.
Radio come yeah. see us come take our yeah. picture and they all showed up
yeah.
So no I missed Mac doing this in real time but yeah I heard you definitely give him crap for it yeah.
It's a very good glow up not as good of a glow up as Evan Mobley's
so
game.
What is your like, if somebody quickly, like, pulls up the phone, they're like, quick, we're taking a picture. Like, What's the thing that you
– sarcastic thumbs up.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good one.
That's a good one. It never – because then you get the general mischievousness of me. You understand kind of how I am.
In college, like it encapsulates in college, my nonsense. The number of pictures that you would look at from, like, your friends and, like, the quick snapping of a photo, the girls always would have their hand on their hip like this. And they'd, like, kick the other hip out. And, like, a little kick out with the hip and the hand down on the hip. That was always the go-to.
All of the almost every college photo of me has been stricken from the internet because
too many red solo cups.
No, it's because the people who posted them are like, "Ooh, not a good look for my potential employer." Like there are.
So you're less worried about that. It's the other people that are worried about.
I work in radio. There's no winning here. Like the reason why I joined this is you know I'm unprofessional and that I'm messy and a
sloppy
drunk.
What's the limit of what a photo of the type of photo you would have on the online that would prevent you from getting a job in radio?
None. Yeah, unless it's like
fully nude.
Unless it's like a furry convention or like a Klan rally, I think you're pretty safe. And honestly, I think there's a station in town if you have gone to a Klan rally that might hire you.
Oh,
is that too soon?
You wanna drop
Is that too fast for everybody? Should we just stick and move?
Probably should stick and move on that one.
Okay, just saying. All right, guys. Evan Mobley, what you think?
Well, I don't think he's. I don't think he's listening to that station. That's
okay.
For sure.
I was going to say,
no,
don't
no,
go.
No, I don't think he's listening to that radio station. But I do think that he's clearly been working very hard in this game.
Yeah.
And I think the debut of Kenny Atkinson coaching this team and trying to take the evolution of Evan Mobley to the next level was – I mean, he passed the eye test, right? Like, he did everything you wanted. You saw him – being sort of the premier ball carrier and orchestrating the offense through him. You saw him being more aggressive. I mean, I thought he made Scotty Barnes' life like a living hell the other night, which I think there's a little bit of like a revenge factor there, like looking back on like the rookie of the year thing when they both came out. But I thought we saw sort of a different version of Evan Mobley where he's attacking the basket. He has this nice spin move in his game now. And it's what we've been waiting to see from him the last couple years. So to finally get to that point where we're seeing it, I think was super encouraging.
So I got to tell you, got a few texts real quick. Sorry. One defense of why it has taken Evan this long to do what he did in game one that does trouble me a little bit is this narrative of, well, you know, maybe he just wasn't ready, which I think is a fair conversation. But I don't think it's a coincidence that, like, this Evan Mobley showed up and there's a new head coach.
Yeah.
And that doesn't – I want to make it clear. Like, sometimes not every coaching style fits for every player. And I do think, you know, this relationship started and then you threw Donovan Mitchell in. And, that, like, there were so many things that I think complicated – JB's job trying to develop him, because I think JB was trying to wrestle with both things. And I'm not trying to say like, oh, this should have happened earlier, but I think it's a weird thing to throw away that new head coach, best game, most authoritative game we've seen from Evan Mobley. And then people go, well, it probably wouldn't happen with JB because, well, just Evan wasn't ready. Those were the same people all last year hammering Evan for not being ready to make the third-year jump.
Well, but I also think, like, on some level, like, JB would say he was going to do these things with Evan Mobley, but then you would never see him. And I think that was part of what people got frustrated with JB at the end, was just the fact that, you know, he talked this talk of, we want Evan Mobley to be more involved, we want him to shoot more threes, but then he wasn't actually doing it. And then he was hurt for a while, came back, and then he started shooting more threes, and it was like at that point it was too little too late because you knew he had to sort of develop that a little bit sooner. So I just don't know that there was ever like a – he made it sound like there was a clear vision for where Evan Mobley was supposed to go, but we never saw it play out on the court. And we saw a coach say that he was going to do something and actually do it with that player in game one. And again, small sample size, it's one game. But it was a step in the right direction towards believing that Evan Mobley can take that next leap that we've all been thinking he was going to take. My question for you, Nick, that I sort of mentioned a little bit earlier is that leap the thing that's preventing this team from making that deep playoff run and actually being a title contender? Like, is that the missing piece? Was just Evan Mobley becoming this star in this league and playing alongside Donovan Mitchell, or is there more they're going to need to do?
Yes, for a few different reasons. One, a really active, dominant, big on the offensive side with that kind of length and that kind of ability. It's going to free you up to make a decision between him and Jared. And then the other thing is you're going to be able to put more size and more shooting around Darius and Donovan. So even if those two guys stay, Evan's emergence as an offensive player and the continued emergence as a five, I think opens up the world. But just on the – Donovan is having to do too much in the regular season. And I think if you look to why he's wearing down, it's not just about the minutes. It is about the workload. And I think if you think back to LeBron and Kyrie or LeBron and D-Wade or LeBron in any of the iteration, the times where LeBron was his best in the finals is when he's been able to take a little off here and take a little off here. And he's been able to cede games to another player. So Donovan's not going to suddenly get to 6'7", 250 pounds. He's not. The best thing you can do, like we're focused on, well, Evan doing this in the playoffs, how does that change the math? I'm so interested to see how does it change the math in the regular season. Because I would imagine the key to keeping Donovan from having those moments where, like, final 20 games he looked worn out, I think the key is having another player that can just take over games and say, hey, tonight's a night where Evan's got to win you the game and score 30. I think that's a huge, huge thing just in the regular season that raises your ceiling beyond the 48.5 win mark on FanDuel.
Yeah, so it's interesting because, like, I do think a team like the Knicks got so much better this offseason and the moves that they made that I still sometimes wonder, like, how close they're going to be to a team like that come playoff time once they kind of get things figured out and they get rolling, because obviously they got blown out their first game, but it was the first game of the season. Maybe we don't know the full answer to this question yet, but I definitely think Evan's ability to become that player, become that number, the player that can be interchangeable as a number one or a number two alongside Donovan, and they can work off of each other, I think it gets you closer to being that championship caliber team. Even if your ceiling becomes like the conference championship now, like, at least you're there, you're on the doorstep, and then you can figure out how to tweak things further. But I've said all along, I thought like that was the next natural thing that needed to happen. So just to be able to see that now is massive and something that gives me hope for the direction of this team moving forward. And then look, if we get to January and you're realizing that Donovan and Evan are playing really well off of each other, but maybe Darius is having to take a back seat and he just isn't providing the punch that you need, like, maybe that then does opens you up to then make that trade. But I on some level, I understand the organization, like, before they jump to that conclusion, being like, well, let's see what Evan Mobley's getting with a coach who can actually pull that out of him, what that does for us before we just decide let's change these massive pieces and get these players out of here that we either helped develop or we brought in when they were earlier in their career and they've now become sort of a staple part of this team. So I like the direction things are heading, and I do think Evan gets you closer to that next step, and it's just about like figuring out how it all fits around him. But this is major. It is.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably impossible to properly illustrate how Evan playing like this in the playoffs and playing like this for a full season, how it changes the math for the Cavs. Like, I think it's something, and I think a lot of it's because we've just speculated Evan's ceiling because he's 7'1" and has all these, like, I think it's impossible to truly illustrate it. And I think that's what makes the season so exciting, is because if he does it enough in the regular season, right, 50 out of 82 games, if he's that guy that he was on Wednesday, it's going to be the thing that you didn't have in the two previous attempts in the playoffs. So we're still projecting, but it's going to give you a lot more faith that especially deeper in the playoffs, that size and that unicornness can take over to a series there. One of our favorites, he's back in the basketball groove there, Chris Fedor, Cleveland.com, joins us now on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Chris, happy JB Bickerstaff revenge game.
Hey, Chris.
Oh, thanks. Feels great to be back. What's going on, guys?
Not a lot. So how badly? How the burning passion JB Bickerstaff has to beat the Cavs tonight. Give us all the dirty scoop here.
Yeah, it's pretty high. Obviously, JB was not thrilled about the Cavs' decision to move on from him. He was surprised by their decision. And, you know, shortly after the decision was made, he was still wondering why exactly it happened. And he's got an opportunity four times a year to play against his old team. And for a team like the Detroit Pistons that are not a playoff caliber team, that are in the early stages of a rebuild, you know, these games carry significance for them. It's essentially their NBA finals. He wants this one, and he's going to get his guys up to play as hard as possible to see if he can be the one and they can be the ones that spoil Cleveland's home opener. He would want nothing more than that.
Chris, Nick and I were having a very spirited debate earlier about this. Does JB deserve a tribute video from the team tonight?
Oh my God, yes. Yes, 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 yes. Look, I understand that he had his flaws as a head coach, and there were things that he didn't do well during his time with the team, and there's a reason why the Cavs moved on. Ultimately, they believed they got to a point where they needed somebody different. They needed a new direction. They needed a new voice. They needed somebody who was a better tactician. But the things that he did for this organization while he was here, we can't just assume that anybody would have had that level of success. And look, part of the reason why the Cavs got out of the dark stages of the rebuild is because they made smart decisions. They traded for Jared Allen. They drafted Evan Mobley. They traded for Donovan Mitchell. Darius Garland made a star turn. All of those things played into the Cavs getting to where they are right now. But they don't get to this point without J.B. Bickerstaff. And for somebody who was around the team, covering it on a daily basis during the John Beilein era, the way that Jared Allen said it today is dead on. The Cavs were in a very dark place. This organization was basically in shambles when J.B. Bickerstaff took over. And he instilled a culture. He got them to buy in on the defensive end of the floor. He made them one of the best defensive teams in the NBA for three straight years. He took them to the playoffs in back-to-back seasons. He did something as a coach that no other coach has been able to do in a post-LeBron era of Cavs basketball. And that should be celebrated. That should be appreciated. That should get him the kind of reception that you would think that resume would get. And I hope that that's the case tonight. I hope that the Cavs do give him a tribute video because, like I said, they are not where they are right now in this great place filled with hope, filled with championship aspirations, without the work that J.B. Bickerstaff did to get them to that point. We can't just sit here and say that every team that goes through a rebuild, they find a way out of it because that's just not true. It doesn't work that way in the NBA. You need the right people involved, and J.B. Bickerstaff was the right coach at the right time for this organization. And it may sound hyperbolic, and it may sound over the top, but he saved them from themselves.
Well, Chris, my co-host today thinks that, and I'm a slight paraphrasing here, maybe applied meaning, but that celebrating a coach that had two playoff seasons and had more losing seasons than winning, I think what he was pointing out is that was loser mentality.
No, that is not what I said at all, Nick.
Hey, do not put words in my mouth. Give your take to Fedor, he'll be the take police.
All I asked was what are the parameters for getting a tribute video?
Because I don't think where's the cutoff.
Because whatever, the parameters, the cutoff, what is the cutoff when you get a tribute video and you don't get a tribute video? That's all I asked,
Chris. And what were you implying, that J.B. Bickerstaff did not meet that cutoff?
I just asked if his qualifications were enough to warrant a tribute video. That's all.
Chris, weigh in here, buddy.
I don't know that you can quantify it, right? I don't know that it's a certain record from a head coach. I don't know if it's a certain record of that team in the playoffs under that head coach. I think it's just taking everything that he accomplished, the record included, while he was there, and asking yourself, If that guy deserves a tribute video or if that guy deserves to be honored. And I think every case is different. But I think in the case of J.B. Bickerstaff, this organization is not where it is right now without his influence. And look, there are still things that he instilled in this organization that are going to be lasting. Kenny Atkinson's here. He's the new coach. He's got different ideas, different concepts, different things that he believes in. But the fingerprints of J.B. Bickerstaff remain on this franchise.
Well, I will say, Chris, you laid out a very good case. So I think I have opened my eyes to the light.
Well, I appreciate
Chris,
that. I try.
Talking to Chris Fedor, Cleveland.com. We've been talking over the last couple of years about the Evan Mobley leap and what that looks like. You know, the word unicorn has come up so many times, but I thought Wednesday night was the first time we really saw the full potential of Evan Mobley, and it was, you know, Kenny Atkinson kind of keeping his promise, right? Like, he said he wanted to use Evan Mobley in different ways and more so than he had been in the past, and we saw that play out on the court. Is Evan Mobley's leap and his evolution the thing that can take the Cavs to being a true championship contender in this league?
Yes, 100%, with this caveat. The Boston Celtics exist.
Yeah.
The Boston Celtics are the closest thing that we have to the dynastic Golden State Warriors. And, you know, a long time ago, one of my mentors in this business told me never say never, because it's the NBA and crazy things happen, and the minute that you say something will never happen, the NBA slaps you in the face with something that you didn't think was going to happen. But I just find it hard to believe that there's any team in the NBA that's going to be Boston 4 times in 7 tries. That's the point that I feel we've gotten to with the Celtics. That's the point that I feel the Celtics have gotten themselves to. Remember those 4 years when it was Cavs, Warriors every single year in the NBA final? I feel like you can pencil Boston into the NBA finals every single year until they show more flaws. They don't even have Porzingis right now, and their starters don't have to play fourth quarters because they're dominating teams. Jason Tatum looks better. Jaylen Brown is the finals MVP. They can play five out in a way that nobody else can in the NBA, not to the level that they can. Everybody that they put on the floor can pass, dribble, shoot. They've got really, really good coaching. So Boston exists, and that makes it more difficult for any team to be considered a legitimate championship contender, especially in the Eastern Conference. But there are people that believe inside this organization, and rightfully so, that if the Cavs are going to hang another banner at some point, Evan Mobley has to be the one. He has to be the best player. He has to be the most important player. He has to be the dominant force that he was in Game 5 of the Eastern Conference Finals against Boston, and the dominant force that he was the other night against the Toronto Raptors. Like, that has to be more consistent from Evan for the Cavs to get to that point. There is nobody inside this organization, not Darius,
Chris Fedor,
not Donovan,
we'll see.
Not Jarrett.
Did we lose them,
there's
or they lose
nobody
us?
Else inside this organization.
Fedor joining us here on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Of course, I'm just going to keep talking because I have no idea if we're broadcasting or not.
Mac, I mean, I thought his answer was awesome.
I was just so locked in on the Evan Mobley. You know
topic.
What it was? If we are still broadcasting, if we haven't dropped, what this is it was the mic drop. He knows that was like his. The top level of his answer, he knows that's as good as it. He's like, I'm just going to leave the air right now. That's
yeah.
what it was.
I mean,
it was disgust about your haterade for JB Bickerstaff.
It was not haterade. I just wanted the specifications of what qualifies a player for a tribute video. That's all it is.
You're all that is wrong with Sports Talk Radio.
How so?